That music means it's time for another edition of WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. My pleasure to be with you on this Sunday morning. On today's program, we've got Veterans Voices and Dayton Youth Radio. We've also got Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. Up first, as you may know, Reentry Stories features conversations between people who were once in prison. More than 1,500 people a year return to life outside of prison in Montgomery County. And like returned citizens all over Ohio, they often have trouble finding jobs, housing, education, and mental health services. All of the people we feature in Reentry Stories were part of Sinclair Community College's Advanced Job Training Program or the Dayton Collaboratory's X Factor Initiative. Today, we meet Angel Hobson Woods, a student at Sinclair Community College and an intern with the Sinclair Communications Department. She wanted to interview her father, Reuben Woods, who had a repeating pattern of incarceration until 11 years ago.
Today, what we're going to be talking about are the experiences in the system. I read that anger was one of the initial feelings when going in. What did you experience?
I stayed angry. I think differently when I'm incarcerated. I'm a whole different person. Like, I have a different regimen. I don't care if I'm doing 30 days or 90 days. I have a regimen. Like, they serve breakfast at 4:30 a.m. I don't eat that. I only eat. And they serve lunch at 10:30. I eat lunch. And then dinner's at 4:30. That's my lunch. I always felt like the first rule of nature is self-preservation. I felt like if I stayed a little hungry, a little starving, I'd be keen to anything going on and around me.
How did you think your family felt?
I felt I had support most of the time. Whenever someone goes away to prison, they take a piece of the family with them. Now, when you in the county, you right downtown, so people tend to think, oh, he downtown or she downtown, so they don't really visit you like that. Or they, and even though when you out, you see downtown, the jail is right there. People riding by it every day, and they just ain't coming to visit.
What resources did the halfway house provide?
I was put in the halfway house because I lost my job on probation. So if you don't have a job on probation, they put you in a halfway house. I was on my way to work, and then I called, and they was like, your probation officer called and said, you ain't been complying, and so they fired me. When probation officers, they'll create a paper trail on you, so you have to have a paper trail. Like, I'm dropping clean, that's my paper trail. I got a job, I got check stubs, that's my paper trail.
What was your mental state while on probation?
You just stay focused on trying to get off and complying. You're cautious of who you hang with. On probation, you're not allowed to be around other felons, but that's like a whole bunch of family and friends. You're always navigating the rules of probation when that's your mental state. And a lot of people that's been to prison would say they hate to be on probation because it's 1 foot in and 1 foot out, so they would rather go do their dead time and things of that nature.
Were you able to advance in education during your time in probation?
Oh, no, they had me in a drug class at a program, the CAM drug program. And so I thought I could go enroll at Sinclair and take up theological studies and piano and all that. And I was doing good. And then the probation officer, he was like, nah, these classes and stuff come first. So I wasn't able to go to college and do the classes.
When exactly did you obtain your GED?
The very first time I was on probation, my probation officer, she made me get a GED.
Were any of your experiences used as inspiration for your books?
Yes. Like, I'm writing my fifth book now, Crime Mysteries, K-R-Y-M-E, Crime Mysteries. Actual incidents that happened to family members, you know, two of my brothers and to myself. I'm weaving it in there. You know, it's going to be fictional, of course, but I'm weaving it in there. And then I have an urban literature book, Trying to Be Angel's Daddy, Some Daddies Stay. That's a short story trilogy. Some Daddies Stay, Some Daddies Run Away, Some Daddies Get Pushed Away. That's definitely for fathers. That's about a father's fight to be in his child's life through child support, visitation, paternity testing, you know. To survive the system, you have to have a mindset to want to do better. To do better is what it is. I got my GED because my first probation officer said, you know, you're going to get a GED. So I got my GED, and I'm just going to keep writing and writing myself about it away, about it, trouble.
That was returned citizen Reuben Woods and his daughter Angel Hobson Woods. Writing runs in their family. Reuben is a self-publishing author, and Angel is a poet. Reentry Stories is produced by Mary Evans, and it's a collaboration between WISO, Sinclair Community College, and the Dayton Collaboratory. Funding support comes from Sinclair. To hear an extended version of this interview, subscribe to the Reentry Stories podcast at WISO.org or on your favorite podcasting app. Children of military families represent a unique community in the United States. Often these children are resilient, yet struggle because of the sacrifice they share when a parent serves in the armed forces. Today on Veterans Voices, we'll hear from Navy veteran Juan Ramirez and his daughters, Nicole Reason and Sasha Ramirez.
I am out of Texas, born in San Benito. Both my parents were from Mexico, and I believe the year that I was born, it was the year they were admitted into the country legally. So fortunate for me, I was on this side of that Rio Grande, and after I met your mom and had you girls, your mom also started working the last year or two doing migratory farm work. From there all the way up to Ohio, we finally settled in Ohio, and we still struggled even with two incomes. So it was suggested to me that that maybe the military was the answer. And I finally said, okay, let's go check it out. The Navy said, we want you, we need you, we'll sign you up. I said, okay. So there was a hope and a dream that was going to change our lives for the family, not just for me.
I wanted to go back to the a day that I remember when the recruiting officer came to our house. I hid underneath the dining room table while you all were signing paperwork.
Yes.
And it was a really traumatic day for me.
Yes, it was.
Can you tell us a little bit about your memory of that day?
Well, some things are hard to talk about, you know. But, yeah, I remember. I remember how hard it was and how you did cry. Because I cry, too.
You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, being thankful, you know, to our veterans. And, of course. But I also feel like people don't really understand, like, the things that you sacrifice and give up and how much it affects your family, like, on that level, too.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, you already had 3 kids and a wife when you joined, so.
That's right. 31 years old, married, 3 children, beautiful children. But we had a dream, you know, and a hope that it was going to better our positions in life. And that's why I went ahead and sacrificed. And it's not like I wanted to do it. I wanted to be separated or if anybody ever thought that I abandoned my family, that is not the case.
I didn't feel that way. I was very proud of you. I thought you were doing something, you know, really, really good. I didn't feel abandoned per se. I mean, we missed you, and
we missed you terribly.
Difficult. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's difficult for kids to.
Yes.
Deal with things without their
dad.
Well,
yeah, absolutely.
And I've always been very proud to tell people, like, you know, that you served, and I do think you
did
create a good life, and we are very proud of your service.
Oh, you guys made me feel proud as well, and I'm very lucky. But sometimes, you know, life just tends to dish out certain things to you, and you got to roll with it. So.
No, I think we do a pretty good job rolling. I think we did, and I think we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We roll.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're round. We roll.
You roll.
That was Nicole Reason and Sasha Ramirez and their father, Navy veteran Juan Ramirez. Veterans Voices on WISO is presented by WrightPat Credit Union with additional support from CareSource. This story was edited by Will Davis. This week on Dayton Youth Radio, we heard from a new class of young producers at the Dayton Early College Academy. Here's Project Coordinator Basim Plunt to introduce this story.
What do Katy Perry, Denzel Washington, and George Stephanopoulos have in common with Dayton Youth Radio producer Brittany Murphy? Well, they're all PKs, or preacher's kids. Today, 17-year-old Brittany shares her memories.
Me being able to accept Christ as my holy Savior is thanks to my dad, Reverend George D. Murphy, Jr., my pastor and my father. Imagine instruments playing, children and adults singing, and a pastor that keeps you in the presence of the Lord. My father started off preaching with a friend of his named Settle Townsend. Then my father noticed a struggling church with about 6 to 7 members that were about to be left without a pastor because theirs had lost hope in the function of the church. But my father believed that where as few as 2 or 3 are gathered in the Lord's name, he will be present, so he decided to step in. My dad always referred to the congregation as the faithful few. The name of our church is God's Vision. Our church is in the Residence Park neighborhood of Dayton. It's around the corner from a famous barbecue place called Shields. Since there were a small amount of members, my mother would pick them up every Sunday for service and every Wednesday for Bible study. If someone missed church, my father would make it his mission to stop by their house, give them a brief word and prayer. I was tasked with singing the opening song for church every Sunday. My dad's favorite song for me to sing is He's Able by Kirk Franklin.
Be strong, my sister, for your work is not done. Keep on believing and hold on tight.
He told me that if anything could get him in touch with the Spirit, it would be the joy across my face when I felt and sang the music. Being a pastor's daughter means you're held to certain standards. I got called the good girl more than the good kids. Just because I'm a preacher's kid, it's expected that everything I say must be sweet and angel-like. But that's not the case. No one expects me to break a rule, cuss, or do anything that might not be acceptable. Honestly, I try to live up to those standards. Being a pastor's kid has its perks, though, because I was spoiled. Anything I asked for, I could have. My biggest high school heartbreak is the loss of my father. He passed away last year on May 22nd of 2018. It was towards the end of my freshman year. The passing of my father was so hard to handle and understand, but I knew he was going to be in a better place. I know that I'll see my father soon because that's what the Lord promised. My brother, Terry Murphy, stepped in as acting minister, and it's almost as if he's a spitting image of my father.
Everybody up on your feet. Say neighbor.
Neighbor.
I'm thankful for you.
I'm thankful for you.
I wish my dad was here. He would be proud of me. This wouldn't be the story I would present if he was here. But I know that any story I had presented that was from the heart, he would have been proud of me. And I hope that he's watching me from heaven, where, you know, some say it's a holding place and that people aren't in heaven yet, but they're waiting for their spot. And I just hope that my dad is looking down on me from wherever he is. And I know that wherever he is, it's amazing because God placed him there.
Our demons are trembling, holy angels defending, in the Father we put our faith.
For Dayton Youth Radio at Dayton Early College Academy, this is Brittany Murphy.
That was Use This Gospel, written and produced by Brittany Murphy, a junior at the Dayton Early College Academy. Special thanks to Ann Rasmussen at DECA. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
You can find more stories like that on our website at WISO.org. The first 3 stories you heard in this program today were created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend.
I had lost my mind. I lost my head for a while, was off my rocker, out of line, out of whack. Had this tiny crack in my head.
Well, tonight in Dayton, music artists will pay tribute to the late Daniel Johnson. Described as a cult legend whose music and lyrics dealing with mental illness struck a chord with countless fans, including here in Dayton. The show starts tonight at 8 at Blind Bob's in the Oregon District. And this past week on Kaleidoscope, Juliet Frumholt spoke with event organizer and musician Jason Trout. Here's some of their conversation, and as you're hearing in the background, we'll wrap it up with music from the late Daniel Johnson.
Jason Trout live on Kaleidoscope on 91.3 WYSO. Looking ahead to Sunday night when there will be a celebration of the life and songs of Daniel Johnson. That's at Blind Bob's. Tell me, Jason, how is it that you first encountered the work of Daniel Johnson? I feel like everyone's got a story about how they first got to know his music.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people from my generation, I think my first exposure was Kurt Cobain wearing his shirt on the 1992 MTV Awards. And at that point, I think I heard some things, heard some songs. My initial reaction, and I've talked to a lot of people, was kind of like, is this a joke? Is this supposed to be funny? And I happened to move to Austin, Texas, you know, in 1995. And when I got there, the mural that's painted on Sound Exchange, the record store that doesn't exist anymore, but it did at the time. And I walked in there and there's his tapes, you know, and started to listen. And even then, it took years for it to click when I'm like, oh, goodness gracious, this guy is an absolute genius. But Austin had a great deal to do with me being exposed to him in the right way, too, because he's just adored there.
It's so interesting that you say it took a few years to click, because I think part of the magic of Daniel Johnston's music is that you may encounter it before you encounter it, but it kind of has to find you in the right moment. Something about his combination of vocals and sound and lyrics that are just complicated and interesting. You kind of, as the listener, have to be in the right place. And I think that's so often we look to artists to be kind of in the right place for the masses. And I think it's the reverse with Daniel Johnston.
Oh, I love that. Well said.
Thank you. Thank you. When you were kind of in that place to really lock in and interact with his music, what was it that struck you about this particular artist?
You know what? And when it clicked for me, it was a specific time in my life where it was going to. I had my own mental health struggles, addiction struggles, and his openness this guy's, you know, he lived with severe manic depression and schizophrenia, and yet he was open about it. So open about it, he sung about it. Or if you met him, he would show you the diagnostic statistical manual of psychological disorders and say, listen, this is my manic depression. These are the symptoms. This is schizophrenia. These are the symptoms. If I'm acting like that, it's because of my sickness. Like, that just takes such humility, and you know, and the fact that he was able to be that open and eventually become an ambassador for mental health, and that his songs were so raw with emotion. They're incredibly simple in structure, and yet the lyrics are coming from a place that it really clicked for me because of, you know, certain things I was going through in my personal life. And I just love him so much.
When Daniel Johnston passed away, it's been a couple months now. I know so many people were kind of struggling with how you sum up his contribution to music.
Yeah.
Because there's the honesty and there's his influence on this whole community of musicians. We see in several of the documentaries made about his life, you know, not just Kurt Cobain wearing his shirt at the MTV Music Awards, but we see Sonic Youth following him very,
Absolutely.
Very closely, and other artists just being so influenced by his work, who might sound very, very different than him. For you as an artist, what's been your takeaway from listening to his music?
As an artist, you know, Daniel was really – he's the only artist that I will cover without any, you know, inhibition. And his songs, I've learned so many of them and play so many of them regularly that, unlike any other artist, when I play his songs, I feel like they're my songs. Mm-hmm. And really, his work from in the 80s when he was, you know, releasing handmade cassettes, this guy sat and wrote these brilliant songs and crudely recorded them on, you know, tabletop tape recorder and made the album covers handmade and handed them out. And that, you don't get any more do it yourself than that. But what's amazing about Daniel is it never occurred to him that there was another way to do it. It was just like he, in his mind, he was a superstar, and these self-release cassettes were the same as any huge major label release. And the do-it-yourself quality of it, just, I just love it. I can't get enough of it.
The doggedness of it too, just
sure.
that the music had to get out there, that there was no waiting for anyone to pick up the phone and call mm-hmm. and say, you've got a deal or this, that, or the other. Just that this music was so almost immediate. And there's an urgency, I think, that translates to the sound of the music too, the recording quality, as well as in his voice. I said in conversation to someone fairly recently, it's this unique combination of urgency and yet longing, which are two qualities that can seem very much at odds at mm-hmm. times. And yet he was able to capture both of those things.
He was.
Tell me a little bit about what you wanted to create with this evening. We've got some great artists that are going to be coming together Sunday night at Blind Bob's.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the genesis of this.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, you know, Daniel's been my favorite artist for some time. And when he passed, it was this immediate thing like, okay, so I got to do something. I have to do something, you know. And I spent so many years in Austin, I knew they would be doing something. You know, it was remarkable what they were able to put together there. But I was, you know, I'm in Dayton. Let's do this. So I knew some people, some artists that I knew were Daniel fans or even played Daniel songs, and some other artists that I was just really, really, you know, almost selfishly wanting to hear play Daniel Johnston songs. So I reached out to some cool people, and they agreed to come celebrate Daniel Johnston by playing a few dozen of his hundreds of wonderful songs.
We're going to hear Jason Trout, Novena, Yikes, A Band, Charles Hartman, and many more making Daniel Johnston songs their own this Sunday night at Blind Bob's. It's a celebration of the life and songs of Daniel Johnston. We've got a link up to more info on the show at facebook.com/kaleidoscope radio. I would love to hear another one.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Fantastic.
In fact, so Daniel Johnston was on MTV back in 1985, and he was able to play a song, and this is the one he played. When I was out in San Marcos a year ago today, they probably would have put me in a home. I threw all my belongings into a garbage bag and out into the worldness I did roam. Hopes lay shattered like a mirror on the floor. I saw myself and I felt really scattered. But I live my broken dreams. The wildest summer that I ever knew, I had a flat tire down memory lane. But I came back after 5 months and a half, and now I'm just trying to explain. Now I'm here and here I stand with a sweet angel holding my hand. I live my broken dreams. I live my broken dreams.
Music from Daniel Johnston as sung by Jason Trout. The tribute show of Johnston's music starts tonight at 8 at Blind Bob's in the Oregon District. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is Why So Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the third week of late fall. The final week of the sleeping frog moon, the transition time for the sun into Sagittarius. My interest in the weather began in 1972 with the gift of a barometer. My wife Jeannie gave me the instrument when I was succumbing to the stress of school in Knoxville, Tennessee, and it became not only an escape from intense academic work, but the first step on the road to a different kind of awareness about the world. From the start, I was never content just to watch the barometric needle. I made charts of its motion. I was fascinated by the alchemy that these records created, that turned rain and sun into visible patterns, symbols like notes on a sheet of music. A short apprenticeship told me when important changes in the weather would occur. The pulse of the world was steadier than I'd ever imagined. The more I learned about the natural cycles in and around my home, the more I found applicable to the world beyond its limits. The microclimate in which I immersed myself gradually became a key to the extended environment. The part unlocked the whole. My backyard gauge that measured the breadth of the planet also measured my relationship to every other place on Earth. This is Bill Felger with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the fourth week of late fall. In the meantime, be wherever you are, and that way you might keep track of the whole world.
Bill Felger contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. We've got more in our program coming up next Sunday morning at 10. Now on WYSO Weekend, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.
Join me Sunday afternoons for a musical trek through the shifting shades of the uniquely American art form known as the blues. Who am I? I'm Eric Henry, host of a brand new show, The Blues Revival. I think you'll like it. Come and listen.
Join Eric Henry Sunday afternoons from 3 to 5. The blues tradition is alive and well on WYSO.
Hey, Paula Poundstone here. That time you came back to your car and there was a big dent in the side, that was me. And that ding on the other side, also me. And the front, sorry. Oh yeah, and that time somebody spilled a peanut butter milkshake and ground a stale ho-ho into the backseat, guilty. But here's the good news. Even that car can still be turned into the programs you love. Here's how.
Learn more at WYSO.org under support.